Welcome to Campaign Beat, our weekly political analysis program. I'm Sally Mock, and I'm joined by University of Montana political science professor Rob Saldine and former Capital newspaper reporter Chuck Johnson. Chuck, this week, Republican state legislator Art Wittig has been on trial, accused of accepting illegal campaign contributions from the National Right to Work Committee. Wittig denies he did anything wrong, but if a jury decides otherwise, he could be removed from office.
Yes, Sally, that's what Political Practices Commissioner Jonathan Modell is seeking, to remove him from office for these alleged violations. I've stopped by the trial a couple of days, and this week, one of the last witnesses was Art Wittig, and he was cross-examined by a Billings attorney named Gene Gerussi, who is representing Political Practices Commissioner Jonathan Modell. And it was a spirited cross-examination. At one point, Wittig said he's the victim of McCarthyism, modern-day McCarthyism, that Modell is out to get him and put the full force of the government behind him. Gerussi, in a couple points, got Wittig angry by asking him, isn't this the law? Why didn't you follow it? And a lot of it stems from the campaign services that were provided by this third-party group that worked on Wittig's behalf. And the argument is that Wittig didn't pay the full cost of these services. And it was a wide variety of services, mailers of what they call campaign slicks, the slick cardboard mailers, four color often, voter lists, walking lists, which identify which households are perhaps sympathetic to Republicans, although Wittig argued he didn't use that at all. Another was a letter from his wife that they were to send out, and Wittig said his wife thought it was kind of a hokey letter and rewrote it at the last. But the witnesses for the Political Practices Commissioner argue that he paid about, I think, about $7,000 for these services. And witness C.B. Pearson, who's a political operative in Missoula, argued that they were worth $22,000. So it's been pretty interesting, pretty dense campaign finance law talk. And I'm wondering what the jury will make of it all. I think most Montanans don't delve that deeply into campaign finance stories, I don't think, although I think they're among the most important. So it'll be interesting to see what comes down.
Rob, the long-lasting implications of this, regardless of the verdict, could be that candidates will think twice about accepting so-called dark money contributions.
Yeah, I think so, Sally. This has been a high-profile thing across the state, especially this last week, but now for many, many months. And I think that's spot on, regardless of what the jury decides in this case. And by the way, there may be more to this. Certainly, if Wittig is found guilty, there will be an appeal of that. So this isn't necessarily over with the jury verdict. But regardless, I think in the bigger picture, take a step back, it will make people probably a little bit more careful about making sure that they're doing everything by the book.
Wittig argued that what's happened to him will be a deterrent to people even running for office. He said there have been over 50 stories in the Bozeman Chronicle about this, and they all use the words Wittig and corruption. And so he thinks it's a move that will impede people from filing for office.
Yeah, that's an interesting argument, given that the Commissioner of Political Practices, Jonathan Modell, argues that the people who were targeted by these mailings were discouraged from running for office, that was a deterrent as well, because they became the target of this sort of really widespread campaign, which in some cases was effective in defeating some of the people who were targeted.
One of them was former Representative Esp of Big Timber, and he was elected in 2010 despite being targeted by these groups, and chose not to run in 2012 because he thought it was so disgusting. And he testified this week too, testified that it was such an ugly campaign he didn't want anything to do with it again.
Right. And despite the trial maybe have gotten into the weeds of campaign finance, there's no question that it's an important trial and will have some repercussions, not just for the people involved in the trial. Rob, Republican gubernatorial candidate Greg Gianforte's charitable contributions amounting in the millions of dollars continue to make news. Why is that newsworthy?
As you suggested, it's not a new issue in this campaign. Democrats and liberals have been raising this on blogs and over social media since last year. And, you know, some of those initial attacks were, in my estimation, premature, over the top. And that's because they came before Gianforte, who has no prior political background, was a declared candidate. But he's now been an officially declared candidate for months, and voters are going to be casting ballots in the primary in the not-so-distant future. So we're well past the point where it's reasonable for the Gianforte campaign to avoid questions about his stance on social issues. And I think that's really what this all boils down to. It's, of course, wrapped up in the Gianforte's charitable giving, which has been quite generous and admirable. But here's the thing. Prominent aspects of that giving suggest a strong, religiously infused social conservatism that would be consistent with that of someone like Ted Cruz or Rick Santorum. And on the one hand, that's totally fine. It's a legitimate space on the American political spectrum. And in fact, I'm not aware of any donations that would be at all unusual for a conservative, non-denominational Christian. But the thing is, his campaign is focused completely on economic and business issues while ignoring the social issues that his record of charitable giving would suggest are very important to him. So that disconnect does raise questions. And the bottom line here is that candidates' positions on social issues are an entirely appropriate and legitimate topic in a gubernatorial campaign. Governors, after all, do have to deal with these issues in the job. And in this particular instance, given the Gianforte's charitable giving, it really can't be any surprise that there's interest in his views here. His campaign seems to be a bit defensive about this stuff.
Not only defensive, his campaign spokesman, Aaron Flint, says the questions are, quote, inappropriate.
Yeah, and I just don't see that. I think that was something that could be said maybe before the big campaign rollout. But, you know, look, social issues are a part of the job. And especially given his record of supporting charitable organizations that take stances on social issues, it does suggest that this is something that he thinks is really important, and yet we haven't heard a thing about it.
Well, Chuck, the speculation, of course, of why he might not want to speak about it is because for independence in Montana, his stance on some of these issues, if it indeed it is his stance as reflected in his charitable giving, could hurt him in the election.
Yeah, I think that's true, and I do think they're very legitimate questions for reporters to ask, just as they are to ask Governor Bullock his stance on these issues like gay marriage and abortion and private schools. These are legitimate issues that are, as you know, are debated on the floors of the Montana legislature every session at great length. And if he's elected governor, there certainly may be bills coming to his desk either in support of these positions or against them that he would be presumably signing into law or vetoing. So I think they're most legitimate issues.
And of course, some of those issues bleed into economic issues. If you look at the states, Indiana, North Carolina, that are now debating the so-called religious freedom bills that have to do with whether businesses who have a religious objection should have to serve gay people, for example. That's come up as a big issue in states and is an issue that certainly could arise in Montana as well for the next governor.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the bottom line here is that these are legitimate issues, and it seems as though the Gianforte camp is really resistant to addressing them, but I don't see any way how they're going to be able to run out the clock on this and avoid it entirely. And my sense is it would be good for them to address this in a much more direct way than they have to this point.
It's not like people are not going to talk about it anyway, as we are today.
Right.
Well, in presidential politics, Rob, the Ted Cruz campaign is trying to get John Kasich's name off Montana's ballot. And their argument is that some of the signatures that were gathered to get him on the ballot in the first place aren't valid. And I think more than anything, this shows how important Montana's June primary is, especially on the Republican ticket.
Right. Against all odds, it might come down to Montana. Look, Cruz has long wanted a one-on-one matchup with Trump, and Kasich is the guy standing in the way. But you're right. The bigger issue now is preventing Trump from getting a majority of the delegates prior to the convention. And of course, if that happens, then it's an open convention and anything can happen. Montana is a winner-take-all primary for the Republicans. And in a lot of ways, Montana looks like classic Ted Cruz country. He's done well in similar states like Idaho and Wyoming. But Montana, because it's an open primary, meaning it's not just limited to registered Republicans, right? Independents can come in to vote. And that is the kind of situation that Donald Trump has done very well in. And so from the Cruz perspective, if you can get rid of Kasich, that maybe helps Cruz win this state. And again, it is a winner-take-all.
It's only 27 delegates, but still, when they're counting everyone.
Only 27. I saw one analysis last week from Larry Sabato at the University of Virginia. And according to his numbers, Donald Trump has a majority of delegates right now with two to spare. And so what that suggests is that 27 delegates, that's a big number with where we are right now.
In the House race, Chuck, Republican Congressman Ryan Zinke supports a fence, if not a wall, to secure the southern border. And here's what he told KTVQ in a recent interview.
We're going to have to secure a southern border. And yes, a fence will work. We're a great country that built the Panama Canal in the 19th century. We can build a fence in the 21st. So we have to secure a southern border.
And security is a theme that Congressman Zinke feels he can speak about with authority as a former Navy SEAL, and is a topic he would like to talk about at length and does.
That's correct. I think security and anti-terrorism and defense are probably the three issues, and they're all intertwined, of course, that Congressman Zinke does talk about the most and are certainly the most important to him, I think, given his background as a SEAL. I don't think this is new. I believe he was saying similar things in the 2014 campaign when he first won election to Congress. But he definitely has made that comment about a country that has built the Panama Canal can certainly build a fence or a wall on the Mexican border. So I don't think this is anything new, but it's certainly something he believes in.
And Chuck, Montana's Republican incumbent Attorney General Tim Fox made headlines recently when he took down a belligerent drunk and held him until the police came. Quite a story, acting quite like a hero in the situation.
Yeah, he was down at a hotel in Billings. I think he was down there for Senator Steve Daines' energy conference, and fire alarms went off, so he poked his head out of his room and went down to the lobby, and a belligerent drunk was throwing punches, and in Fox's own words, cold-cocked him. And then he recovered and then threw the guy down on the ground and had him in a half Nelson when the police came. You know, a warning to belligerent drunks, if you're going to pick a fight, don't pick it with the state's chief law enforcement officer. I think Tim Fox is the overwhelming favorite for the office to be reelected to another 4 years, but this certainly doesn't hurt his campaign any. I'm surprised this story hasn't gone more viral than it has.
Well, I guess the police were quite stunned when they arrived and found out that their ultimate boss was the one who had taken this guy down. Quite a story, for sure.
Yeah, it's a great story. You wish you could have been there to see it.
Well, you've been listening to Campaign Beat, our weekly political analysis program. I'm your host, Sally Mock, and I've been joined by former Capitol reporter Chuck Johnson and University of Montana political science professor Rob Saldine. Let's all enjoy the sun this weekend, and we'll talk next week. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Sally.
Thank you, Sally.